Stay tuned for The Turning Point. Okay, a couple of things today before I take off and maybe land or maybe not, or land in some other place than I intended. I wanted to make sure that everybody understands who listens to this show, that this show is basically sort of a free-form, spontaneous ride that I take. And most of what you hear here, 90%, 95% of what you hear me say is probably my opinion. Because the reason I say this is that some people get upset sometimes because I cite facts or something like that. Well, maybe I do. And if I do, I shouldn't unless I have some sort of reference. I know when some other people do radio shows on here, like Gary's show, he would never express a fact without, you know, without a reference or several references to back it up. But here, I may tend to act as if something I say is absolutely true, 100% a fact. Well, unless I actually give you a reference, I'm not telling you to disbelieve everything I say, but basically most of what I say here is my opinion. So unless I give you a reference, don't get, you know, so because the reason I mention this is, because I often ask people, and I do the same with people on my mailing list. If you wanted to join the mailing list, by the way, it is go to FederFiles, FederFiles.com, FederFiles.com. And there's a place where you can contact me and also join the mailing list there. Now, the reason I mention this is because, and I often invite responses. I say, if you have a response to this, or I am welcoming any response that you have to this show, feel free to agree or disagree, and feel free also to point out where I may have said something that I assume to be true, or I make an assumption which is not based on any fact or you know to be false. I don't mind at all. This is a two-way street here. I don't think radio is just me broadcasting and you listening, and that's the end of it. I wouldn't mind playing a game of responsive electronic ping pong. You want to email me, feel free to do it. Second thing is that tomorrow is, and I get more and more detached from this as time goes on, and ever since, actually, I had, it's almost a year now, I had almost died from a heart attack. I've been drifting away from, it's not necessarily a good thing, but I've been drifting away from the current urgent concerns of the day. Maybe because I had more than one foot in the other world for a while, and now I feel like I still do have one foot in the other world. But that's not a new experience for me. However, for a long time, for many years on the air, and here in Sirius Radio and WBAI, I was very adamant and very opinionated about all sorts of political issues. And I still am. I still feel very strongly about things that affect all of us, like global warming, fracking, the NSA spying on us all the time, the dictatorial powers of the president, which get worse all the time. So, corruption in Congress. I mean, there's a front page article in the New York Times today about corruption in, they don't use the word corruption, by the way, in this article. The New York Times wouldn't do that. That's what places like PRN are for. There was an article about how every month, book clubs where people meet to discuss books, the latest book, and people get together, like seven or eight people get together, and they've all read the same book, and they talk about it, what they feel about it, as they're going along, I guess. I've never been in a book club. Or when they're done reading the book, there's a book club meeting every month for Congress people. And it's for the Republican Congress people. They get together every month and discuss a book that one of the members of the group brings in. And guess who comes to the group? A group of Congress men and women. Presumably it's rotating. Maybe it's the same group. Sorry about my voice. It's a little more scratchy than usual today. And also lobbyists for insurance companies, health insurance companies, drug companies, oil companies. Lobbyists go there, and they basically, since the Supreme Court decided there was no limit on how much money anybody could give anybody for a campaign, and we're seeing this again, it gets worse every year. So now the midterms are tomorrow. Senators and Congress people will be elected or diselected. And tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe in the end when they count it up, $1 billion will have been spent. And you don't know exactly who it is. As some super PAC, the PAC to correct the environment, the PAC to supply more energy. It's not even, they have these vague names. Sometimes they don't even have names at all. They call themselves the BPAC. Whatever. And so I don't know. I think the Supreme Court and the Senate and the Congress, since they're all corrupt, they should just remove the last obstacle here. Why have any obstacles? Why not just legitimize and make law or make a ruling by the Supreme Court that anybody, no matter how rich, can give as much money as they want to elect anybody? And just basically, then the poor are completely screwed, and democracy, which is already on a respirator and almost dead, will be dead as a doornail then. What's the difference anyhow? It's already that way. So anyhow, every month the Republicans get together in the House, that is, and they meet with lobbyists, and essentially the lobbyists, pledge money to them and give money to the people who need the most money. So what is the reason I mentioned that? Apparently, it's better to have a Democratic Senate. The Senate is in trouble as far as Democrats are concerned. Now, the House is overwhelmingly concerned, controlled by Republicans and some conservative Democrats, overwhelmingly controlled. So there's nothing that can be done of any progressive nature in the House, obviously. And the Senate is supposed to be some sort of Democratic bulwark because they have a couple of extra votes and they control the Senate. They are the majority. And they are apparently in danger of losing this. To me, in the big picture, and not even such a big picture, it doesn't seem to make much difference who runs the government. It's basically a government based on, it's a government of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich, run by an executive who is manipulated by the rich. So whenever there needs to be a war or federal land used to dig up minerals or explore for gas or some way to evade global warming restrictions, some way to screw about 90% of the American public, Congress, and that includes the Senate and the president, cheerfully go along. There is no privacy anymore. There's no civil rights for people, protections, freedoms. So I'm not saying give in and give up. There's other ways to, you know, to be active in the world of politics, and there's other ways to be active in the world of culture. I'm not saying to give up completely. I'm not saying to drop out like in the 60s, you know. But with a volunteer army, and the president has a personal army, with the NSA spending billions of dollars on your tax money spying on you, I don't see a whole lot of hope to it. But that doesn't mean you have to stop. You can't stop fighting with them. You can't stop struggling with them. So having said all that, apparently it's a good idea that if you live in a close state, if you live in a state where there's a close election for the Senate, House seems to be a lost cause. But, you know, if there's a very close election for the House between a Democrat and a Republican, and there's a close election in the Senate especially, because then both houses of Congress would be Republican if the Senate went Republican, hold your nose, close your eyes, and vote for the Democrat. Then take, after you leave the voting booth, go home and take a very, very strong purgative. Take something that could clean your whole system out. Because both of these parties, as far as I'm concerned, with the exception of maybe a handful of people, are totally corrupt and have no interest in democracy. They're all just self-serving or serving the rich. So tomorrow, that's my get out the vote. That's my get out the vote speech. Now, getting back to what we were talking about before. Actually, you know, Jason, do you have Monster Mash up there? Friday, you don't? Did you delete it? Oh, you have it? Okay, because Friday was, this past Friday was, as everybody knows, Halloween. And the kids were out, and the pumpkins, and not just the kids were out, lots of things were out. And that's something I wanted to talk about today. Let's start off with that.
For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
Wow.
From my laboratory in the castle east, wow, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast,
wow, wow,
the ghouls all came. Their humble abode,
wow,
to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
Wow.
The zombies were having fun.
In a shoot,
the party had just begun.
In a shoot,
the guests included Wolfman.
In a shoot,
Dracula and his son.
Wow.
The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds.
Wow.
Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds.
Wow. Wow.
The coffin bangers were about to arrive,
wow,
with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
they played the Monster Mash. Out from his coffin, Jack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the Mash.
It's now the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the Mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the Mash.
It's now the Monster Mash. Now everything's cool, Jack's a part of the band, and my Monster Mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what it said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can Monster Mash.
Yeah, yeah, the good old days. I'm the Monster Mash. I think the Monster Mash came out when I was in college. Yes, I think it did. So that would be, maybe I'm wrong about that. I could misremember. It was, it might have been 1962 when I was a freshman in college. It's hard to believe, right? It sounds like an archaeological dig. It's so old. Speaking of the Monster Mash. But it was cute. You know, all the little kids were out. All the kids were walking around on the streets. So they were all, you know, going from one place to another, visiting other schools or, you know, trick-or-treating. And so there were thousands all over New York City. There were thousands and thousands of little devils, angels, superheroes, witches, vampires, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And they're cute. I mean, they're really cute. I mean, it's a little bizarre to see them walking along, but still, it's the cutest thing in the world. And they come to your door in my apartment building. I grew up out in Queens, where most of the people in my neighborhood, almost everybody lived in a small little house. So you would go from house to house and say trick or treat, and everybody would dress up. And there were people didn't buy costumes in those days. There were very few Halloween costume stores. Now, oh, by the way, as far as Halloween goes, I think this was a couple of years ago I read that Halloween has now surpassed Christmas for a couple of years already in the amount of money that Americans spend on this holiday. There's no more holiday that that more money is spent on than Halloween. Christmas, the celebration of, as tawdry and commercial as it all has become, yes, the celebration of the birth of the Prince of Peace, of the founder of Christianity, or rather not the founder of Christianity, but the Son of God, the inspiration for an entire religion, and all of his profound teachings, or somebody's profound teachings that were attributed to him, to Jesus Christ, or Jesus of Nazareth. Used to be that was the one where people spent the most money in this country. Well, it's not overwhelmingly, it probably is still overwhelmingly a Christian country, what with the immigration of so many Latinos. But it is less and less, it is more and more, I should say, a secular country. And what we have here is Halloween, where people spend money on parties and costumes and presents and gifts and candy and cake for people, has now surpassed Christmas as far as money spent by Americans. And there's something important about that, too, of course. There was an article on Friday in the paper. I can't read you this whole article, first of all, because it's not really so well written. And secondly, you don't want to hear a long, boring article read by somebody who sounds like a frog. So, and anyhow, the whole point of this article, which was written because of Halloween, the title, it's entitled Ghosts Are Back. Basically, what it's saying here is that once upon a time, of course, once upon a time, long ago and far away, and maybe not so long ago, not so far away, people believed in ghosts. People believed that they would see specters, ghosts. You remember Ghostbusters? You know, they would see ghosts. And very often, these ghosts were sad, pathetic, or scary. At the very least, they were eerie. They were never a comfortable thing to see or to hear. But to see ghosts was always a scary thing. Why? Well, for the obvious reasons, because it was a revelation to people who, let's say, didn't know any better or who believed very strongly. And most people did back 150, 200, 250 years and backwards, that you know, that such things did exist, that there was other worlds, that there was a hell, that there was a heaven, that there were vampires, literal vampires, actual ghosts, there were demons, there was the devil. And people believed in that. They really believed in it. And of course, if you go back several hundred years, or you go back thousands of years, there were a multiplicity. It was universal that there were spirits, ghosts, demons, devils, gods, angels. I always like Greek mythology the best because every single tree, every rock, every stream had its own particular spirit, its own particular little god or godlet. And everything was holy in those days. Everything was holy, or everything was possible, possibly dangerous. So that everything was alive. Everything was alive. And people in those days, very few people understood or believed, hardly anybody, the idea of what the atom was. Although the Greeks came up with the idea of the atom. But the idea that everything is, in a way, alive. And I don't mean that it's breathing, but that it's moving is what I mean to say. Movement is life. Movement is life. And for a human being, the beginning and the end of life is judged by whether or not somebody is actually breathing. When somebody stops breathing, they are said to have expired. And that literally means the final expiration of your breath is an inspiration when you breathe in, and there's an expiration. The word of God, it's in the King James Version of the Bible, it says, in the beginning was the word. And the word was literally, it's interpreted by various translators as the breath of God. So God inspired, he breathed into the world, he breathed into the world life, and especially into man and woman, but at first with man, of course, what else? He breathed life in. And when somebody dies, they are said to expire. And it is their last expiration. It's their last breath. And when the breath goes, then they check and see if there's a pulse, if the heart is beating or not. And all this depends on whether or not oxygen is being taken in or taken out of the body. But in those days, back in the day, and way back in the day, people believed in ghosts. And, of course, eventually, with the maturity, you could say, or maybe that's not such a good word anymore to use, if you look at the human race, with the maturity or the evolution of the human race, all of which I'm not so sure about, people stopped believing in ghosts. So by the time that Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol, ghosts were really sort of poetic metaphors, or they were beginning to be seen as, and you could see this in A Christmas Carol, they're beginning to be seen as projections, psychological projections of what people felt inside, which was in a whole new way of looking at things. Before that, all devils, ghosts, gods, demons, devils, spirits, all came from the outside. They were real, and they came from the outside. You had to propitiate them. You had to avoid them. You had to pray to them. It was a very very powerful thing, and you had to run your life by these things. I suppose a lot of people turned their backs on it, and it wasn't as if everybody always believed, but generally the public believed in that. But there was a book that came out. I'm not so sure how recent it was, but it's called Specters of the Self. This is a quote from the article, Ghosts Are Back. The cultural historian Shane McCorristein points to two reasons for the transmutation from believing in ghosts not believing in ghosts, the solidity of real ghosts. The first was skepticism about the supernatural, and that's the one where, and then that's linked to the concept, the psychological concept of hallucination. So seeing ghosts became a psychological phenomenon. It also became a pathological one, which is basically what he means, the same thing. In 1848, the British skeptic Charles Ollier spoke for many when he wrote that anyone who thinks he has seen a ghost may take the vision as a symptom that his bodily health is deranged. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there'll be a pill for it. And somebody should be able to talk you out of it, because that's not a real ghost. And so, you know, people lost, when they lost their faith and became more secular, they stopped believing in the actuality of ghosts. And but now, in the late 19th century, there was a rejuvenation as the truth of an otherworldly reality, as faith in ordinary Christianity declined. Then, through the 20th century, things started to replace these things. There were seances. Seances were a very big thing. Psychical research. And now, in these days, everybody knows that popular culture is absolutely splattered with, peppered with, overwhelmed with stories. I was looking at TV the other day, and there were ads for new TV shows. They're all about vampires and ghosts and monsters and creepy things that crawl around. And commercials, all commercials are all about, they're not just for Halloween. I mean, they're creepy. There are television shows which I haven't watched. There's one called Grimm. There's a Twilight series. There's a Harry Potter books. It's not just television. It's basically, he says here, pop culture is richly populated with vampires, zombies, the living dead, Harry Potter books, the Twilight series, television show Grimm. There's one called Sleepy Hollow. Sci-Fi Network has produced 16 paranormal reality shows. And it's a 2013 Harris poll found, now listen to this, that 42% of Americans believed in ghosts. Do you believe that's true? Sometimes I think when people take polls, that people make, you know, people are so sick of everything in popular culture, including poll taking. And they blame poll taking for replacing actual moral and intellectual sincerity and courage in politics, especially. I think if somebody called me up and said, do you believe in ghosts? Why would you give a poll taker a straight answer anymore? Do they deserve them? What is the point? If somebody called me up and said, do I believe in ghosts? Not necessarily. But if somebody called me up on the phone and said, sir, I'd like you to participate in a survey, or came to my door, do you believe in ghosts? I'd say, oh, yes, I do. I saw one just the other day over the can of tomatoes up on my shelf, and it spoke to me, and it said, don't eat spicy things anymore. It was a food advisor ghost. I mean, who answered? 42% of Americans believe in ghosts. But this is interesting. It said only 24% of respondents 68 or older believed in ghosts. Why would you need to believe in a ghost? That's counterintuitive. I would have thought that the older you get, no matter how rational you are, though you've experienced the deaths of other people by that age, certainly I have, anybody who's 68 has experienced it, and maybe their own near death, that the natural tendency to want to believe in an afterlife, which is very powerful in almost everybody, and the idea of being extinguished completely, mortality, becomes more and more unacceptable as you grow older. But here, it said that only 24% of respondents 68 or older believe in ghosts. Anyhow, he says here, scholars sometimes talk about this supernaturalization as a kind of reenchantment of the world, as a growing awareness that the modern world is not stripped of the magical, as the German sociologist Max Weber and so many others once thought, but is in some ways more fascinated than ever with the idea that there is more than material reality around us. I think this is because, however, there's a deeper reason. Just as spiritualism became a means to hold on to the supernatural claims of religion in the face of science in the 19th century, bad old science drove away belief. The supernaturalism of our own time may enable something similar. The God that has emerged in the post-1960s renewalist Christianity practiced by nearly a quarter of all Americans is vividly supernatural. a Jesus who walks by your side just as Jesus walked with his disciples. Do people really believe that? That there's an actual Jesus walking by your side? Maybe they do. The assertion that supernatural is natural, that the supernatural is natural, helps to make the case for God in a secular age, because it promises people that they will know by experience that God is real, and et cetera, et cetera. So these kids are walking around the other day. The little kids are walking around, and they're cute. But it strikes me, and it always strikes me every time I see them, when they've got all their store-bought outfits from, because we made our own decorations. We, you know, our mothers or our aunts helped us decorate our little faces with cat whiskers or, you know, I mean, or they made little, you know, witches' hats. There was a lot of ghosts walking around because all you had to do was take a sheet and cut a couple of holes in it, and you had a ghost. There weren't stores, huge stores. On Broadway, where I live in Manhattan here, there are things called Halloween superstores. About a month before Halloween or several weeks before Halloween, stores that are vacant are rented temporarily for a huge price. I mean, talking about $10,000 a month or $20,000 or $30,000 a month, and stocked with every possible costume and variation of cosmetics and everything to dress people up and stuff for parties for Halloween. And masks, you name it, a million things. And they're constantly, they're all over the place. So most of the little kids I saw the other day were dressed in uniforms that were bought for uniforms in Halloween outfits, in Halloween, guises that were bought for them for a not inexpensive amount of money by their parents. And, of course, these will all be thrown out in the trash. This is more of American consumption. Maybe $100 million in costumes and makeup were tossed the night after or the day after Thanksgiving, of Halloween, and just tossed in the garbage. And next Halloween, because the kids get older and because they don't want to have a used costume or last year's costume, God forbid, the people will spend another $100 million on costumes. But what strikes me when I see these little kids walking around with these costumes is, of course, they have no idea that these things that they're walking around representing, like witches and devils and vampires and monsters and ghosts, are things that really were believed to exist and scared people completely out of their wits once upon a time, and that people truly believed in these things. They truly believed in another world, in a supernatural that wasn't always so pleasant. And there was a day, and this is something that's popular throughout many cultures and has been for a long time. I mean, just look at Mardi Gras and look at various, if you go back far enough, there's, All Fools Day and All This Day. There's always a day in every popular culture where the regular gods and regular authority is set aside, where the boundaries of reality are completely ignored or erased just for the night or for the day, usually at night, of course, when these things can happen supernaturally. And the dead come from the world of the dead and the undead and enter the world of life. The boundary is erased. The door is opened, and people... And it's a way of letting off steam. It's a way of letting off cultural steam. And people can lampoon the king. If you go back far enough, it was okay to do that. I mean, the day after that and the day before, if you said something about the king, it cut your head off. That day, that was in various cultures, you were allowed to be sarcastic or lampoon the king or pretend that you were the king and be... making a fool out of the king or something. But so these things existed all over the place. There was always a time when the boundary between the other world or the dead or the devils or spirits or angels was erased. And these spirits, these demons, the souls wandering or the souls of the dead could come into this world. And there is, now, of course, most people consider themselves rational, and we're in the world of science now, and they think this is absurd. But still, something like Mardi Gras and other places, the observation of these holidays, like Halloween and Mardi Gras, they're not serious. They're all just for fun. And by the time I was in the 1950s, in the mid-50s, the early and mid-50s and late-50s, when I was celebrating Halloween, it was all considered because it was the age of rationality and the age of science. After all, this is after the atom bomb had been dropped. This is after jet planes. This is after, technical advances and all, you name it, science, chemistry, medicine. And people tended less and less. And after World War II, what the men had seen in combat in World War II, and after the Holocaust was revealed and everything, and the Nazis and what they used science for. So science, good and bad, people believed that they were really monsters. Yes, they were monsters, but they were human beings. And they didn't believe, they didn't have to go too far after World War II and after the Depression to see that life, that there was a hell. It was on Earth. It wasn't in another place. And the increasing skepticism brought about by science and by things like World War II. So by the time I was walking around, it was just considered a cute thing for the kids to do. Except that I lived right next door, right practically on top of, almost in, a huge cemetery. And it was still creepy for children and parents. It was still something, this cemetery was there all the time, 24/7, 365 days a year. And it was something that people avoided. Grown-ups and parents, grown-ups and children avoided this. They avoided it. They didn't necessarily, they would say, oh, there's no such thing as ghosts, or there's nothing to worry about, kids would get very upset, who lived next to the cemetery like I did. They'd say, oh, I saw a ghost in a cemetery, Mom or Dad, help, help. They'd have bad dreams because they saw shadows and ghosts. Basically what they saw was the shadows at night, especially. At night is a time when also the boundaries between the conscious and the unconscious are erased. After all, most people go to sleep at night. You go to sleep at night, and what happens is, thanks to Freud now, most of us assume that is the unconscious, that all these nightmares and these dreams we have that are terrifying and we wake up sweating from, and nightmares of things that seem to be impossible in terms of switching of time and place, or great monsters or beasts or things that scare us to death, or absolutely beautiful, ecstatic dreams that people wake up from. More often people have nightmares or bad dreams. These are things that are repressed from the consciousness during the day. And if you're lucky and you can actually sleep and descend to that level of sleep, I guess it's REM sleep, then these things will come out, repressed feelings, urges, hatreds, violence, sexuality that you can't acknowledge during the day. These days I even wonder. I wonder, what is unacknowledged? What is unacknowledged these days? What is not right in your face? I mean, do you need to dream? Do people need to dream anymore? I worry about kids, and I worry about grown-ups. I mean, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe that's just the evolution of human beings. According to Freud, and I think a lot of other people agree with this, that one of the reasons for, you can see Shakespeare quotes and everything. One of the reasons that people dream and have nightmares or have strange, bizarre things happen in their dreams is because, not because there's another world that's creeping into their heads when they're asleep, it's because they have repressed these things. The consciousness, in order to live an orderly, sane life, your consciousness has to repress these things during the daytime. You can't have these feelings. It's like the Victorian age, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But for each human being, that's why good sleep is so necessary. And that's why people who are artists or lunatics or children don't really do too well with this aspect of life. I've had hallucinations in my life. And did I think, when I was on a bus once, in one of my periods, one of my, unfortunately, several periods of near psychosis, I was riding on a bus and saw people's teeth growing out of their mouths. like some kind of vampire monsters, and saw people's teeth turn red, and saw people's eyes turn red. Teeth coming out of their mouths, eyes turning red. Walked out of the bus and saw a lamppost turn different colors. I wasn't taking LSD either. This is what happens to a brain that is not firmly anchored in reality in the first place. And if you grew up the way I did, you would understand. If you grew up next to a cemetery in a sort of a sad, kind of crazy haunted house like I did, you would understand that. But sleep is absolutely necessary for this. It's necessary. I mean, if you don't get good sleep, you wind up with these unconscious things filtering. They don't stay repressed. They don't stay in your unconscious. They filter into your life. And this is why artists are very driven and almost crazy sometimes. Poets, especially painters, you know, people who paint these bizarre, strange, abstract paintings, people who look at a flower and they see it. You ever see a Van Gogh painting? I mean, you could see that the guy felt that everything was alive and possibly dangerously alive. And Picasso and any kind of abstract painting, it's an expression. It's an expression of what lies beneath. What lies beneath? What lies in the unconscious? And they are expressing this for everyone. They're expressing this for everyone. And you know how kids are, right? If you've had kids, there's monsters in the closet. You have to turn the light on. I think I saw a monster. Is there any kid who's never seen, I don't know, a witch or a monster or said there was something nasty or something scary in the room or in the closet? Well, do they know something we don't know? Or is it just because, what is it about kids? Kids have, like artists, like people who, you know, sadly lose their minds when they're adults, the line between reality and unreality is not firm. There is not a locked, there's not a locked cell between one and the other. You know, like those things on submarines, an airtight or a watertight door that locks shut between unreality and reality. But there, it just doesn't exist for children. And as a rational grown-up, presuming you are one of those, as a rational grown-up, you you have to reassure your children because they don't know. Children don't know. They are born with and they grow up until a certain age. And part of the reason that the kids emerge, one of the ways kids emerge, and it's sort of bittersweet, emerge into something more unlike, you know, being a pure child, or eventually emerge into something resembling adulthood. As each stage goes on in childhood and they get older and older, they believe less and less in magic, less and less in magic, in the supernatural. They're less and less interested in cartoons, although more and more people are interested. What is the explanation? And there's something sad about kids losing that, but what is the explanation for the fact that now adults are the main audience, for all of these television shows and books and movies that all are about the supernatural and all about superheroes and super demons and vampires and all kinds of evil things creeping around? What is the reason for this? What is the reason for this? I think it's a kind of a backlash against scientific skepticism and rationality. I think that's one reason for it, that there is probably a natural urge in human beings starting, because we're all children still. We're all children still. And we let me read a quote to you from something, and maybe it'll say it better, because this is something that was written where somebody had more time to contemplate it. Quote, "If we were completely aware and responsible for ourselves, all perfectly realized Buddhas, there would be no need for gods and demons. But we are all imperfect. We are all more or less forever children, and therefore we locate the origin of our guilt and fear, our rage and hatred, even our love and goodness sometimes, outside ourselves, lest we be completely possessed by them." And people talk about possession. So it's when you have kids and you see them grow up, it's a little sad to see them not, you know, it's good to see them become rational. It's good to see them not, say that you don't want a kid who's 13 who's still seeing monsters in the closet, because then you start to worry. But I think one reason that there is more and more of this kind of stuff these days, where you see big ads on buses for vampires and this blood and all this stuff and all the superheroes and all the demons. The reason for this is a backlash against the relentless horribleness and truth of science. After a global warming is real, it is not creationism, it is not God, it is not the devil that is causing droughts and giant tidal waves and huge storms and drying up the water on Earth, you know, where the water level is going down and the water is evaporating. The Earth is heating up. The atmosphere of the Earth is heating up. And God isn't doing it and the devil isn't doing it. It's not because we haven't prayed enough. And I think that is the other reason why there is a tremendous backlash against science and reality and rationality. And you see more and more of this billions and billions of dollars being invested in Halloween, in the supernatural. On one hand, it's just it's kind of contradictory. On one hand, people think it's just a big joke. You see more and more grown-ups dressed up in costumes. When I was walking around on the street the other day and in the early evening, you see, you know, the typical thing which you see in Manhattan, which was really strange because when we grew up, it was all house to house. But you see people bringing their kids into the stores to get candy, into the Duane Reade drugstore, into the cleaners, into the nail salon, trick or treat. So all these places, it's almost like blackmail. It's like they're being held up without a gun, right? These people don't. Into the eyeglass store, people are going in trick or treat, right? And this is what happens. You only see this in big cities, and maybe you only see it in Manhattan. I don't know if it happens in the city where you live, but I never saw this till I moved to Manhattan, where kids go around to stores and have their handheld plastic pumpkins or their bags or whatever it is, and collect loot and goodies. Nobody gives, of course. And when I was a kid, people used to give people pennies. They gave people pennies, too. Well, first of all, now you can't give people pennies because a kid could choke on them, and that could result in a lawsuit, and that would be the end of you, and it would be dangerous. So that's wrong, to give kids pennies. Also, obviously, what the can a penny buy? What can a penny buy? When I was a kid, people gave pennies or handfuls of pennies because you could buy candy with it. You could actually buy different pieces of candy with it. So there's this backlash against science and reality, because people don't want to believe that they are poisoning their own world. They don't want to believe in global warming. They don't want to believe that having a football stadium's worth of lights on 1,000 times across the country almost every night during football season is actually draining, actually causing pollution because of the energy and the source of the energy needed. They don't want to believe that natural gas results in fracking and poisons the water and poisons the earth. They don't want to believe that, nobody can stand to believe, apparently, even people who adamantly, say there is no such thing as creationism. They believe in global warming and they believe in science. They don't want to believe in their own responsibility for this. They do not want to believe in their own responsibility for this. So they are more and more interested in the supernatural. And they say, oh, it's a big joke or it's funny. But I don't think people think it's so funny. I think they are actually becoming more and more. And I think the last reason is kind of a sad reason, is because people see that the earth really is kind of in the last days, but not the last days in a biblical sense, although it may appear to be that way from the results. You know, giant tidal waves and huge fires and maybe firestorms. I think people see it's the last days because of the world that created, that human beings created. God didn't do it again. Devils, again, did not do this. The devil didn't do this. Human beings did this. And I think people can't accept the responsibility for this. And who is free? Very few people are free from this. No matter what kind of light bulb you buy, no matter how much you save on power, I mean, if you've got a car and you've got an apartment or you've got a house, and if you're using, good for you, if you're using solar energy and you're trying to grow your own vegetables naturally and you're not using, fertilizer and, chemical fertilizers, there's a lot of people who do live like this these days, but they are sadly in the minority. They're sadly in the minority. So, I know I'm wandering all over the place. That's what I said earlier in the show. If you have something to say about the show, including the way it's presented, go to FederFiles, FederFiles.com, and tell me what you think about some of the things I'm saying, or tell me what you think about the show entirely. So, yes, there was a switch sometime in the 19th century, and this is when Freud came along, and people believed in the unconscious. The unconscious became a substitute, and it's accepted to this day, along with neuroscience. It's not the psychological unconscious of Freud, but neuroscience. In other words, if your brain is misfiring or certain natural functions of the brain are not working right, they will give you one of a million different kinds of pills they've figured out to make tons of money from, of course. They will give you one of these pills to reestablish the natural order of the way your brain should work. But, of course, something artificial can't reestablish the natural order of anything. And this is the contradiction. But nevertheless, people take a lot of pills for depression, for psychosis, for a million other diseases, including they prescribe these things for kids, for attention deficit disorder and God knows what else that they decided that kids are. Every time the new book comes out with the diagnosis of psychiatric diseases, there's more and more of them and more for kids. So between... And there's another thing about growing up as a kid now. When we were kids, our imaginations were allowed to roam all over the place. An imagination was an important thing to have. Now I wonder, do children actually have as active and useful an imagination as they always did? Are things really still the same? Because with all the video games and all the graphics and all the astounding things that you see on TV and again, video games on computers and in the movies, does that not take place? This is a question. I'm just asking a question. All these things are more questions than you know, observations. Does that not take the place of imagination? I mean, does that not actually steal the imagination? What is the value? What is the purpose? What is the place of imagination in the human mind? It's connected somehow to the subconscious, connected to dreams. And I guess it's a final thing to say about all this. And I've had hallucinations. I know what lurks underneath. And one way of thinking about what lurks underneath is the old way of thinking, the druidical, ancient, mythological, religious way of thinking, that there are actual spirits and demons and devils, and you better propitiate them or else. Or that you better, if you do the right thing and you act the right way, that you will go to heaven and you will be in the presence of God. There are, you know, billions of people who believe this. I talked to a cab driver the other day who I brought up the subject, so he felt free to lecture me on what paradise was like. And sure enough, he told me, if you live a good life, and that's fine. I mean, if that's what causes him to live a good life, and he looks like a very decent guy, he was telling me about his family, then he gets to go to paradise when he dies. And paradise, there are, he said, beautiful virgins, and anything you want, you have forever, including apparently beautiful young virgins. I'm just passing on what the man said. You know, I personally would find that a little tedious to be with beautiful young virgins all the time. But I'm an old fart. You know, what do I know? Maybe I just don't have the energy. I would have been interested once upon a time if that was paradise. To me, paradise right now would be watching a nice TV show and having a good, calm sleep. But that's because I'm an old fart. But in my young days, maybe I would have been, maybe I believed in that more. But what I'm concluding with here today is that is there really no other world? Is it all just brain science? Has science actually... and skepticism and secularization actually eliminated from the thought, conscious and unconscious thought processes of human beings? Has it eliminated the reality, if there is a reality, of another world? I mean, the Aborigines of Australia used to think, I don't know what they think now, you know, maybe they're all included in Australian society, but the Aborigines used to think that this life here, the one we're living, is a dream being dreamed by a being, a person, in another world. Is that hard to grasp? In other words, we think that there are other worlds someplace. They go you one better. They say, we're the other world. And all of this is but a dream. And all great poets throughout history, and, you know, like Shakespeare, you know, life is just but a dream. It's a dream. And But I wonder, do you believe in anything like that? I think most people these days, if you ask them, they would say, no, it's all in your mind, or it's a disturbance of the neurochemistry of your brain, or it's all the unconscious, it's all the stuff you repressed, it's all your childhood, it's all this. I'm willing to believe that. God knows it's been true in my case. It's true enough. But I'm not sure I'm willing to give up the idea that there is another world, that there are spirits everywhere, that everything is alive and has its own little daemon or genius, was what the words the Greeks used to use, that everything is connected. But that doesn't have to mean that it's otherworldly. It means it's right here now. It's right here now. Other people are right here now. Rocks are here, trees. I mean, if you can see through the asphalt and the bricks and the glass and the steel of a modern city, underneath the asphalt, underneath Broadway where I walk, is still rock, is still dirt that came from the most ancient of times. And people live there who have long ago died, and their ashes and their bones and their chemicals or whatever they were made of, and their souls have gone somewhere else, but they have sunk into the earth. Are they completely gone? Is there no other world at all? Again, the Aborigines of Australia used to think there was something, there were lines that flowed throughout the whole country underground. And if you listened with your heart and with your unconscious mind and with your ear, you could hear songs. They called them song lines. Imagine that, running all through Australia, if you knew where to look for them or how to look for them, there were songs being sung. Some ethereal song being sung, and you could hear them. So they lived a life that was connected to the supernatural. And you say, oh, yeah, they're primitive people. Maybe that's just true. Maybe when people finally, when society has finally evolved or matured and believed in science, but you see this backlash. But the backlash has a bad name. Why? The backlash against science and skepticism. Why? Because it's done, the backlash is, in this country specifically, is creationism. In other words, the backlash is to go back and believe that if you pray to God, that there is a mighty, awesome God, if you pray to God, and if you act the way Jesus told you to act, and if you avoid being in the company of the devil or acting like the devil, there is no global warming. There is no human-made global warming. Women do have a certain place in society. Just look at the Bible. There are millions of Americans who believe in the literal word of the Bible. That's what gives this reaction a bad name. I'm talking about reacting to science and skepticism in another way, poetically, imaginatively, and maybe even really. Maybe there really is another world, because I believe that everything, like the Aborigines, is flowing underneath us and connects us all. There's some, I can't call it magic, but there's some eternal energy that flows underneath and around and through all of us, and it's flowing underground all the time. It's always there.
Time. the bottom of the ocean. Move the water. Cover the water. Move the water. From the bottom of the ocean.
Let it go.
Yourself, am I right? Am I wrong? You may say to yourself, back!